We're on The Basement, the only blockchain podcast that interviews the forgotten and downtrodden devs that actually do the work. Hosted by me, Martin G. And this episode, we have the one and only Kat Baker from R3, and we're going to be talking about the promise of Corda. Hi, Kat.
Hey, Martin, how's it going?
So, Kat joined R3 in June 2017, which was 4 months before the open source version of Corda was released, in October 2017, and a whole year before the Enterprise Edition was released in July 2018. Her first position was Corda OS Release Mistress. I wasn't sure if that was operating system or open source.
Well, that was a role I invented for myself. So I joined R3, as you said, and everyone was sort of doing everything to get the open source milestones out. As we were sort of trying to get a sort of more professional cadence going towards the enterprise, it's like, well, someone needs to kind of love this process and not just make it quite so ad hoc all the time. So I just kind of, and I'd done similar things in similar roles in the past, went, all right, out of the way, let me do it.
Come on, amateurs, step back.
Yeah, it's one of those roles you sort of make yourself a rod for your own back. But it was fun, and I got to write a lot of fun blog posts extolling the virtues of Corda releases.
Now, you are the core engineering group lead, which I think must make you a lot of people's boss. Is that right?
Rick and I have a fair few people working for us, yeah. I think it's about 60.
60? Wow. Yeah, and you were, and when you joined, I reckon, you were the only woman in the engineering team? Is that fair to say?
No, we had Kasia.
Kasia was already there. I had her down.
Kasia was already there.
She beat you to it, did she?
Kasia was there. I remember when I interviewed, she was like, oh, please come.
Right. Let's do these 20 questions so we can get to know you, shall we?
Shoot.
Okie dokie. Right. What company do you work for?
R3.
What do you do there?
Co-group lead of the core engineering teams.
How old were you when you started programming?
I was pretty old. Probably 18, 17, 15.
Do you have a nickname?
Cat.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up on the south coast, Brighton way.
Where did you go to uni and what did you study?
I went to university in Reading, and I studied computer science.
And then robots, right? It was robots.
My PhD was indeed in robots.
When did you start working in software?
I fell into getting a job in 2005.
Which industry have you spent most of your career in?
Ooh, that's a big data.
What's your operating system of choice?
I'm purely agnostic on that. My gaming machine runs Windows, my laptops run macOS, and my servers run Linux.
What's your programming language of choice?
C++.
When was the last time you wrote some code, and what did it do?
I fixed a bug in my C++ version of the Corda serializer this afternoon.
Favourite music to listen to whilst you code?
Just some really loud and screamy death metal.
Loud and screamy death metal. And can you give us a band?
Heaven Shall Burn.
Sorry?
Heaven Shall Burn.
Righty-ho. Name one skill all programmers should have.
Communication.
Agile. Is it a force for good or for bad?
Capital A agile force for bad. There are problems that are entirely amenable to an agile, quick iteration, quick feedback cycle. Makes perfect sense, especially in the consultancy, especially when your end user don't really know what they want. Then there are problems that are completely unamenable to it, which require serious thinking, serious upfront design, like an operating system, like a blockchain platform, perhaps. Like there are aspects of Agile which are great. There are rapid coding to a demo, having feedback on what you're building, stand-ups to share and communicate. I think a lot of that though tends to come from teams that actually just work together for a long time. I come from some very weird places where in some cases it was just anarchy, and that works. Like if you've got 5 or 6 or 10 really really smart people just pushing forward, you don't need a process, but everyone knows what's going on. Processes come in when you scale. It's a thing R3's done. So it's not that I'm I hate Agile, but you've got to take the good bits and ignore all the dogmatic parts of it that come out of the woodwork. Anyone says there's one true way of doing it, is I will run away from them.
You heard it here first. If anyone, there you go. For all the people who work for Cat. run away.
Software engineering is craft. It is a craft, and you have to let people be creative. I mean, you can treat agile programming as a way sometimes to get a minimal acceptable amount of work out of some ad hoc group of low-skilled developers, perhaps. Or you can go, well, no, you guys are experts in your field. You're very smart. We have very complicated problems. Impress me. Like, yes, it'll take 6 months to do this, but, and I'm not saying go away for 6 months, come back in 5 months, go, we didn't do anything. But it's, again, it's finding the right process for what you're trying to achieve and working with every personality type you've got on the team. It's, as everything, it's more complicated than a single book can make it out to be.
There's a there's that film, isn't there, with Brad Pitt, Moneyball. Element of Moneyball, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. You can always find the good bits of something. It's like Waterfall. It has good bits. Also, Waterfall is a complete straw person. That doesn't actually exist.
It so is a devil, a straw man, isn't it? A straw person. It absolutely
straw person.
Is.
Straw person.
Right, then we've got six questions to go, so let's crack on. Do you or have you ever owned any Bitcoin?
No.
Ooh. How long have you been using Calder for?
Basically, I guess the day after I joined R3, so about 3.5 to 4 years.
Why did you get into Calder?
Why did I get into Calder? That's, I was looking for an opportunity, and I'd had a few roles come up, which I was sort of interested in, but then I got the interview from, you know, this, you know what it's like when recruiters phone you up and they sort of pitch you on a job, and you start thinking, that sounds really interesting. Okay. I could go on this journey. And I just got really, really excited by, that's a really complicated problem. It's a really clever bunch of people. It's got a really good idea, but they need other people with other skills. And I think I have some of those skills. I really want to join them. And I really wanted to join them before I did the interview. And I don't think I played it completely cool.
Don't worry. You're talking to someone who's never played it cool in his life. So what is the best thing about Corda?
The best thing about Corda is it's not finished. It's not done. It's not right or wrong. It's what it is. It solves great problems, but we're not done. And I think that's the best thing. It evolves as what we're trying to do, or everyone is trying to do with it evolves. The Corda was what it was because people, smart, very smart people, looked at a technology, worked out how it could be applied to a bunch of problems. Ultimately, it was an exercise in, you know, looking at the future and going, what will people do with this? What features of a platform would people really value? What won't they value? What will they want to do with it? Let's build that. This is a growing space, you know, and that's the great thing. The things people are doing with Corda and other technologies like it today, 5 years' time will be different, and Corda will be different correspondingly. I mean, when blockchain is, you know, in the next like 20, 30 years, it's a, you know, one of the old blue chip established techs that is never going to change and be boring, but that's the best thing, is we're not finished.
When it becomes boring, although, you know, it'll no longer be a bandwagon for me to hitch my hitch myself to, I mean, that's kind of where you want it to get, right?
That's where everyone wants it to get. I mean, even, you know, I'm a little bit biased towards Corda, obviously, but if you look at the promise of the technology and what it could do, no one should be complacent. You know, the amazing technologies have failed because it was the wrong time, or you know, certain infrastructure wasn't in place. You know, the classic trying to sell video on demand when only everyone's got like 26K dial-up. But you pitch at the right time and everything changes. Obviously, we want it to be adopted. I think it's a great leveler of what people can do. I think it really will improve things. But until then, let's have some fun building it.
Right. What's the worst thing about Corda then?
I don't get to write much code on it anymore, I guess. The downside of becoming, you know, senior is you end up programming with people as opposed to a text editor. So I guess the worst part of Corda is I don't get to play with it much. That's such a cop-out, I know.
That is a massive cop-out.
No, I can answer that. What is the worst thing about Corda? The last time I went into our docs, they weren't amazing. But, you know, we are taking steps to fix that, but...
Right, what is your favourite Corda open source library?
I'm going to have to pick the serializer that I wrote.
What? You got a why?
Why? Oh, because it's my two favourite things. It's C++ code and it's a serializer.
What is the best place to start? To start with Calder.
Oh, I would have to say Code Club. the best place to start with Calder. I mean, like with all technologies, unless you've got something to do with it, it's very hard to find a problem to solve, especially with something which is inherently distributed. Like it's Calder by itself. Like even writing your own app is kind of pointless. By its very nature, it is a technology that requires multiple parties to be of interest. So just playing with it by yourself, well, you didn't get very far with that. It's you're limited by the problems you've got. So something like Code Club, which sets out a group of people to cooperate, but also a sort of constrained problem, is a really good place to start.
Yeah, yeah. It's I mean, like when we're brainstorming for ideas for Calder Code Club, it's actually really easy to come up with a web app that you can write with Calder, and then we're like, but that's what's the point, you know?
Well, I think all the best ideas. I mean, because you've got the classic ideas, you know, it's the very classic workflow stuff. But if you sort of go off piece and try and shoehorn a problem into a sort of distributed blockchain platform, you actually get some really creative like solutions to problems. Like, how do you represent this in a way that devolves control over the entire state? Which is kind of the promise of what, you know, Calder is.
Pow, there we are. Come on then. What is the promise of Calder?
I mean, the purpose of Calder is many-fold. But I think ultimately, Calder the technology, you know, if you look at what the ledger is, you can take a holistic, unrealistic view of the entire ledger. It can't ever exist because nobody has access to everyone's vault. So the promise of Calder is that these disparate, unorganized collection of facts can be implicitly ordered on a global scale, can be collapsed to a point of negotiated exchange by two untrusting parties, putting an implicit ordering over their subview of that graph. And then that can be enacted in everyone's shared view of the ledger, devolved control of that, without anyone else being involved. And once you've done that, you can then take two of those more personal views, collapse them with other people, and continue that evolution of the global state, but at a local level.
Now, if you were listening to that and you didn't already know what a state is in Calder, would you understand that? When you say a state, are you talking about the computer science?
No. I'm thinking of the state of the ledger specifically as a snapshot view of something that doesn't really exist. Think about it in this way. If you could fly and you could go up really, really high and look down on England and you could see where everybody was at once, that would be a kind of global view of this country and everyone in it. But you can't do that. That's impossible. So whilst it's theoretically a thing that could happen, like somebody could in theory do that, you can't. And that's basically the ledger. Theoretically, if I could at one point have access to everyone's individual vaults, I would have a global view of everything. But that's only a theoretical construct. What the ledger actually is a series of private event chains that only have meaning in the global sense when they exchange with other people, like you and I do something. Our two unordered ledgers come together and mutate each other in a way that we sort of have devolved control to the platform. And then we move on. But that's the promise of Calder. It's because once we've done that, you can then collapse your view of the ledger with someone else's to a single point in time and put an implicit ordering point. Who doesn't love an analogy?
I love an analogy.
What's going on in your house right now? What's going on in my house? Those are kind of, there's an implicit order to the events that are going on and the interactions that are happening. But there is only a collapse point where an actual order is ever established when something happens that intersects those two event chains. Until then, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't ever see your event chain. Once a function is triggered that supposes a transaction, I propose something. Now, that's a point of collapse. To take these two implicitly ordered event chains that are unordered in the global sense, but find a point at which in the global ledger, which is really a thing that you can't actually measure, you can then exchange and then go your separate ways. It's kind of like you have these two parallel lines that come together at one point and divide again. And then but if you keep picturing that happening with all of these different subsets, An implicit order grows as this evolves, but no one ever sees it until it collapses again. And that's the beauty of the corner model of a DLT. You have an event chain. You know, you have a ledger. It is a series of updates that mutate things and that pass between and evolve over time. But what's happening in your land and someone else's ledger, land, whatever, without an external focus, there is no ordering between those two series of events. It's only when, in Call of Parliament, a transaction is proposed and two events within those two different ledgers are consumed and then new ones created, is an implicit ordering created between these two disparate ponds. It's a point in time where these two ledgers collapse, agree in ordering, and then diverge again. And that's the important thing, of course, is it is the ordering, the global ordering, that is important. There's always a global order, but it is implicit. But it is enforced by the platform, even though you never really see it being enforced. You just go, because that's the nice thing. What you're doing effectively is devolving to a contract, piece of contract code, and the platform effectively the ability to allow that collapse point to mutate your local ledger to a series of rules that you've all agreed to.
I mean, the amazing thing that what you're talking about is how much you make it sound like real life, but this is programming.
I think it's deeper than programming. Corda, if you want to make something robust that is future-proof, that is well reasoned about and can be evolved, you can't just write code. You can't just design it or even architect it. You have to think, well, what are the founding mathematical principles upon which this is built? How do we model this? What is the expression of it? Obviously, you can look at, you know, set theory, graph theory. You can look at how do these things evolve? What are the events and chains? And what is on-ledger versus off-ledger? What is an attestable fact? What is a non-attestable off-ledger attestable fact? You know, who is signing what? You have to relate it to a real-life event, because ultimately, all computer science is about generating sympathetic software that will be used by humans. Even if it's just pressing a button saying go. Like, we want to have, it has real world consequences, it has real world events, whether that's shared workflows, whether that's trading assets, whether that's turning my lights on when I get home. Eventually, it interacts with real world, the real world. So it has to be sympathetic and it has to be boiled down to those, you know, to that level, I think. To do a good job, to do a rigorous job.
So let's take what you've said in that case and let us apply it more specifically to Corda, because it feels like that we've kind of blurred up blockchain and Corda, or is that wrong? Is that to do Corda a disservice?
I think it is to do Corda. I mean, Corda is a distributed ledger platform. It is about a local view of a evolved set of entities. You know, it's a ledger. It's a classic, your local view is a journal. It is a append-only updated series of evolved transactions. Sorry, states evolved by transactions. It doesn't matter what they represent. And that's the joy of Corda, they can represent anything. But what you're doing is you're externalizing permission for those to interact with other aspects of this network.
What I want to do with this conversation now is take it and bring it right back down to earth. But the one of the promises of Corda is also, in my mind, is profit and making money and do it in a better way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the promise that's where the promises of Corda come in. Like, that point of collapse where two unordered journals agree something and mutually update in a way that both entities trust, that's really powerful when you compare that to me faxing you something and then you, your post department opening it, entering it into your system, having someone sign it and send it back. All those events can be viewed as chains of decision making. That's not impactful to the other party, which is great. Because we have technology that solves those problems. The point is when you have to have that dealt with by another party that you don't particularly trust. You trust them to a point because you have a business relationship. But how do you, to those two entities who have a view over something that could be like anything. It could be a transaction, a genuine transaction, like I will sell you this for in exchange for this. It could be an eventing system when a thing happens. How do we both agree when it happens or has happened? That's the promise of Corda. Like, well, how quickly can that happen? When you devolve that to a smart contract, it happens for you both at the same time, give or take, you know, entropy. It happens, and you can't argue, and there is no repudiation because you've devolved that trust, the update to the platform.
In that sense, then, when you have atomic swaps, is that a feature then of Corda? Is that like a double, a belt and bracing of?
Well, that's an emergent property of the system, that you can do things like, you know, DVP. What you want, fundamentally, I mean, which is where I'm interested in, is the sort of more theoretical end of it, is if you give people a rich enough tool set, they will do amazing things with it, which is really what the promise of Corda is. The promise of Corda is not really what we make. It is what people do with what we've made. As we've seen, people have done everything from trade finance applications to a poker game, which is wonderful. It is the promise of Corda. Like, the low level thing is, how do we agree, and how do we both know we both agreed in a timely fashion? Like, and all systems right now, that's really hard. Well, it's not hard, it's just slow, and it involves paper and trust, and how does that scale? Because it kind of, you could imagine, I mean, the other thing is, you could imagine you and I wanted to do something. We don't quite trust each other, but, you know, we could set up a thing. But then say we wanted to bring a third party into that to do, you know. So have we got to pull them into the system? And if there's a fourth and a fifth, like, this, it stops being practical. But when you can trust a platform like Corda, you don't have to worry about scaling it, because you have the platform there, and the logic just works.
Well, that's why you have bookkeepers, because their job is after the event.
Absolutely.
So sayonara bookkeepers. You were talking about one of the things about Corda is, you know, giving people loads of cool tools, and from that, yeah, they'll go off loads of options, loads of tools, and from that, people go off and do all sorts of crazy stuff with it, right? But coming back to that idea then, what about one of your, picking up on one of the other interests you've got, is this idea of writing Corda apps in different languages. You know, the fact that with Corda, you can program it so that you can write the Corda apps in C++. I mean, I know that it's not just C++. I guess if you can do it with C++, you can do it with anything, right? Any other language.
Mm-hmm. I think long-term, that's clearly a lofty goal. Like, right now, Corda targets the JVM. That's the platform upon which it's deployed. But Corda itself, Corda is an expression of a concept. What it is, I give you this message, you give me this back. That's how it works. This is what a thing looks like in the vault. Whilst that's moderately tied to the JVM, it's not. The current version is just an implementation of that. With time, with skill, with interest, that, you could do whatever you wanted with it. Again, you can look at what is the expression of contract code versus workflow code. You can look at different projects out there that have done interesting things with, you know, contract generation, and how do I the proposal of a transaction, what are the various states, transitions this can make, i.e. what can anyone do, can you model that? So I think it's not a priority right now. I think over time, it'll evolve that way. I just keep doing it as my little pet project because it's fun.
All right, cool. Right, I want to ask you another question before we wrap things up, and that is harking back to the interview I did with Mark Simpson, and we were talking about biocomputing, and we were talking about Corda apps running on pot plants in 2040. So what do you think, Kat? Will Corda ever run on a pot plant? Are we going to get there?
Oh, oh gosh, there's so many angles to take that question from. You think you'd have to look at what would you be doing with your pot plant. So if we're talking about some kind of biocircuitry that could have a presence, I mean, what would it be doing on a ledger? I can honestly say corner pot plant edition, not a priority. It's one of those like digital ones with like that flaps its leaves and has a little, it's an IoT device. So what you could, of course, do in theory, carbon capture.
Right.
You could trade carbon units.
Oh, yeah.
Because, of course, you have a plant that absorbs carbon.
Yes, it is. So it's growing, yeah.
So you could buy carbon units from...
Crow carbon units.
Yeah, you could buy micro... You could trade a micro carbon unit from nature.
Yes.
Like itself, which then those plants could reinvest to buy more of themselves. There you go.
Yes, amazing. Thank you very much. I think we better leave things there. Kat, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Martin. Thank you for having me.
And I really wish you all the very best of luck with wherever R3 should take you next, or whether you wherever you should take R3 next.
Indeed. And we need to get back to normal so I can get back to stealing pizza from you.
Yes, we do. Yeah, okay, fine. You can have some pizza next time. Right, see you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter to catch future episodes, and all previous episodes can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. This show was cooked up by Martin G, with assistance from sous chef Tess Shepherd-Smith, and served up with aplomb by Oscar Bennett. All the way from the basement.